Welcome to Charting the Course, a podcast from Full Sail Capital, dedicated to providing you with insights, assurance, and confidence to grow and manage generational wealth. Full Sail Capital is a fiduciary registered investment advisor managing more than $1.5 billion with a focus on integrity, competency, and transparency.
Tyler and I are joined today by Tony Tyler of Tyler Media to continue our discussion around stewarding generational wealth. As with the other episodes in this series, Scott joined to help guide the conversation due to his background and relationship with Tony.
Man, this has been a blast to do. This series has been incredible. We've had a lot of good feedback so far. So just a reminder, if you've missed any of it, there's been two previous conversations. The first one was with our own Scott Cravens, who Dexter just mentioned, sits in on all of these to kind of guide the conversation as we go. And then the second one was with a gentleman by the name of Brad Croy, and he was phenomenal as well. So I encourage all of our listeners to go back, listen to those first two. If you're new, this series is the first one you're listening to, go back, pick a couple out and listen to those, because we're having a lot of fun doing this. And I hope it's been enjoyable. So Dex, you're doing a great job.
I know you'll enjoy our conversation and hope it serves you along your journey. Tony, thanks for coming by today. It is an absolute honor. And I say it's an honor because I'm aware of what you could be doing with your time on your platform that you chose to spend at us with just a gift that I'm appreciative of. So thank you. I'd let you introduce yourself, but if I did, I think you'd just be self-deprecating and nobody would know why you're on the podcast. So Scott, please give him the introduction he's worthy of.
Happy to do that. So Tony is a very dear friend of mine, one of the dearest friends that I have, quite frankly. Our family connection goes back to the relationship that his father, Ralph Tyler, shared with my grandfather, Jim Scott. And we're talking about family and generational wealth and businesses and enterprises. And Tony is somebody that I wanted to come on because he's somebody who is a thought leader and emotional leader for me in terms of how I view these things. And that stems from his involvement and the way that he approaches his family's business, Tyler Media, which Ralph, his dad, started in 1965. It's got a great story. I'm not going to take it away from Tony, but Tony has taken the business that the generation before him started building, and he has made it his own. He and his brother have made it their own, and he's taken it to the next level. And that's the kind of person that I think our clients and listeners could benefit from hearing from a little bit more. So I'm honored to have him here. And I alluded to in my podcast, Dexter, that, you know, there are people that I really respect. And Tony was one of the people that I was talking about for sure.
That was hard for you to say, wasn't it?
It was harder than I thought it was going to be, but it still felt right. It just doesn't feel right when you're sitting here. Usually I'd say nice things behind your back.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Scott. Mm-hmm.
So like you said, we asked you to come on the podcast. It's this series about talking with individuals who are in the sort of stewardship phase of generational wealth, in particular those with family-owned businesses. So in that vein, is it okay if I ask you a few family-centric questions?
Absolutely.
So my daughters, they're both below six. They don't know what I do for work. At some point they will, but at some point they're going to know that there's no company for them to run because I have no company. I don't think that was the case for you with your dad owning a company. Can you just kind of talk about that dynamic as the son of a business owner?
Certainly. I don't feel like Dad ever pushed Ty or I into the business. Ty has disagreed at times where there was just a little bit of pressure to have to get into that. But we grew up in it. I mean, we grew up picking up trash at the office. We grew up putting on bumper stickers with people's permission on their cars. I mean, you know, excuse me, would you like a free KEBC bumper sticker on the back of your car? And just memories of Saturdays and Sundays going out to grocery stores and doing that, being in the studios with the jocks. And it was just a really neat experience being around that, never feeling the pressure to do it. Dad got out a part of the business before Ty and I became of age to take over. He sold the radio station, but he kept the outdoor advertising company. So we came along later and had the opportunity to take that over. I do want to point out, you know, without my mom and my dad and the great people that they had surrounded themselves with, Ty and I joke, he says we were born on third. So, you know, we thought we hit a single or a double, but there's no doubt about it. Dad put us in a great position with a strong company and strong people. And so we were able to grow that from there because of the work that had been done before us.
That's the kind of humility that you don't get often from people who have been as independently successful as Tony to acknowledge that there were people there before. But I will tell you, having watched Tony for a number of years and knowing what's happened in the business over that time, there is no doubt that Tony and Ty have been every bit as part of the success of Tyler Media as what they took over. And I use that adage, born on third, too. What I think is really important for people to remember is that what you're trying to instill in folks that are responsible for generational wealth is the ability to, from third base, get back home, right? Be willing to pick up the baseball bat and swing it again. And that's certainly what Tony and Ty have done, for sure.
And so instilling those values, now you have kids of your own, and I've interacted with one of your kids in both a professional and a little more relaxed environment, and he is a wonderful human being. The kind of kid that I hope me and my wife are raising.
You should meet his other kids. They're way better.
Okay, yeah. Good. That's a pretty high bar. So I would ask, how is that dynamic now as a father with having a business and having children? Do you hope to see them take over? I highly doubt that you're pressuring them, but I'm just curious how you navigate that dynamic now.
I'd like to think that they don't feel pressured. We, again, are fortunate. My brother and I, and he's such a great partner, just phenomenal partner. We complement each other very, very well. He's so creative, so smart. But we are fortunate to have grown the business with great people. And if the kids were to, you know, want to get involved, something we can cross that bridge when we get there. They're just now coming of age where that might be of interest to them. We can start having those conversations. But the beautiful thing about it is we've already got incredible people that we get to work with every day. They do a wonderful job running the organization, moving us forward and heading us in the right direction, keeping us in the right direction. So, you know, if the kids ever have that desire, it's possible to have those conversations, but they're also going to be competing with some pretty solid people.
I know it's hard. Is there any part of you that hopes that they want to take that over?
Oh, that's a hard question. People want legacies sometimes. Mm-hmm. They want to see their business continue to grow. I want what's best for the community. I want what's best for the people I work with. I want what's best for my kids. If that's meaning that the people we have take the company and continue to grow it, or if my kids come along and take the company and continue to grow it, and that's what's best for the community and everybody involved, sure. As far as a longing in me for that to happen, no, I want them to do what they want to do.
I want to hear more about the community aspect. But first, there's one more family relationship that I want to ask about, which is your brother. So Scott has said he had the fortune of eating your siblings. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's why I'm an only child. I ate my siblings. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, it's just it's a preventative measure I had to take.
I think Ty wishes he'd have known you earlier.
Are you saying he would have eaten
me? He would have eaten me.
So alas, he did not. And a lot of family-owned companies end up having one sibling in charge. For better or worse, you guys do not. How was that succession plan? Was that organized? Sort of how did we end up with two siblings as both more or less equally involved?
When Ty and I took the business over in 1995, Dad sat us down and he said, our general manager who had helped the company get to where it was retiring. And he said, I'm selling the company. You guys can buy it or I'll sell it to somebody else. I don't care. We said, you know, we'll take it. And it was a sweetheart of a deal, but we decided to stay in the business. And he said, one of you has to be in charge. I don't care which one it is. You have to be in charge. And so we've done that throughout the years where I would be in charge and then he would be in charge and then I would be in charge. And not from a very inconsistent where the staff would wonder who's in charge today. It would be years, decades, whatever. Mm-hmm. He would take this division and I would take that division. But we also always agreed if we didn't both agree on something, we didn't do it. And I'm fortunate to have a visionary brother, one I can trust with anything. It's just a very fortunate relationship that some families don't have.
What's that dynamic like with working and owning a business with with somebody you see at Thanksgiving then also?
It stems back to our upraising. Our parents fortunately raised two kids who were willing to get along with each other. Ty always treated me with kindness, short of, the few times he pushed me off the roof or whatever it was. He always let me hang out with his friends. He's 4 years older than I am, and I got to do things with him. He really always has shown me that kindness. And then as we got older, it was respect and support. And I'm very fortunate to have, it's kind of interesting, he actually set that example for me on how I should treat him in return.
From an outside perspective, I'll add to that I knew Ralph Tyler a little bit, and I didn't know him well on a personal level, but when my granddad died in 2007, he called me on the phone And he was so kind in the words that he said and so gracious. And then some years later, I was actually going to meet Tony for breakfast. And I was walking in the door and Ralph was walking in ahead of me. And I stopped him and I shook his hand. I said, you know, Ralph, I'm Scott Cravens. It's really nice to meet you in person. Just want to reintroduce myself to you. And he said, he looked at me and he kind of squinted at me and he said, Scott Cravens, Jim Scott's grandson. I liked him. I like you. Come on. And we walked inside. That was, but he was the kind of person that undoubtedly was going to raise people who were confident enough to step into the role of being successors in a family business. And I think what you're hearing Tony articulate, if I could translate it to, you know, just general things, is that sort of leadership that Ralph exhibited gave Tony and Ty the confidence to be willing to come into the business and accept ownership of it. So they're accepting responsibility. And by doing that, they are thereby excluding entitlement to anything that may come from that. And from stewardship and responsibility, you'll find humility at its root. And that's what you're hearing in his description of that. And in the description of their relationship, there's enough humility that we can keep this thing going together rather than an entitled person who will simply let it get torn apart, right? That's what we've talked about before.
Scott, that's incredibly articulate. And that's what he did. He said, and the reason he got out of the business in 1995 is he saw us coming on and he decided there wasn't, he had seen too many of his friends and their family businesses ruined because the family fought. And he said, he led by example, like he always did. He stepped aside and turned it over to the next generation. And I know he cringed. I know there were times he didn't like what we did, but he always respected our decision. And we were fortunate. He came to the office every day. He was our mentor. And there were times he'd say, you know, what about this or what about that, and keep us on the right track.
I'd like to ask more about that idea. So how similar is the company that Ralph started to the company that you purchased to now the company you operate? Is it similar? How different is it? How has the company changed since 1965 to 1995 to now? Does that make sense?
It does. Great question. I'd like to think that the people who have been around, and we've got some people who've been around about that long, would reflect and say it's the same company. That would be a huge compliment to say that we have the same fundamental beliefs and culture that Dad established all those years ago, because they're really good ones.
Do you have the same revenue streams?
We don't. So we grew from, you know, Dad had an advertising agency and then got into the radio station business, 94.7, Keep Everybody Country, and which was just the dumbest thing you could do in the late 60s, early 70s. Nobody had an FM radio. Everybody listened to rock and roll. But fortunately, there was a penetration of FM radios into cars by the mid-70s of 70%. People were starting to have FM radios at their houses. And then, thank God, there was Urban Cowboy. And it just exploded in 1978 when Urban Cowboy came out, and you would have thought he was brilliant.
So I would imagine there's been some decisions. You mentioned that he probably cringed at times. How was it with taking the company in a different direction? If maybe not different direction, but I'm sure you either had to or just did things that maybe weren't what the previous ownership and then thus your father would have done with the company. How was that dynamic?
Certainly. So he moved from the radio station. He added the billboard company to it by advertising the radio station. So he started building billboards and putting out bus benches to advertise KEBC. And we would have clients ask us, can we buy those? Can we buy those? So a billboard company was created alongside the radio station. Later, he sold the radio station, had the billboard company. And that's when Ty and I came along, got in the business. And we immediately got back into the radio business. It was in our blood. Ty saw some opportunities that we could benefit from, and so we did. We got back in that business. And so from a industry standpoint, we really haven't gotten outside the lines. And again, from when we bought a radio group in 2012, they had a great culture. And so we were fortunate to bring on these already great people and merge them with what I would like to think we were a good group too. And it has worked out very well. It's been a great mix of people. And they have helped create, when you hire the right people, they create the right culture.
How would you describe the culture of Tyler Media at this point? So I've heard you talk a lot about the importance of people, having great people. How would you describe the culture at this point?
That's a great question. I'd love to have a place people want to work at. They're proud that they work there. They're not embarrassed by where they work. I'd like to think that they think we do good civic and community work. We make a difference. We don't just sell advertising. We allow businesses to grow. We allow them to feed their family, to employ people, to pay taxes. And it's an honorable trade that we do by making a difference in our community. And then by our outlets, our radio and TV outlets, we're able to have some influence and make a difference and make people, make sure the city's honest, the county's honest, and we're making good decisions.
So you've mentioned the city a lot, and I'd just be curious, describe your relationship with the Oklahoma City Metro at this point, if that's possible to do so.
It's one of the best places in the world to live. Who wouldn't want to raise a family here? It's incredible. The outside of the economic benefits, the cost of living, and you know, we invested in ourselves back in 1993 when we passed MAPS the first time. It wasn't about what American Airlines or United Airlines wanted. It was what will benefit the people who live here. So we invested in ourselves, and we've been continuing to do that. We shove billions of dollars in our economy every couple of decades because of the MAPS program, and it's amazing.
I know the MAPS is one of your favorites, Scott. Would you like to elaborate at all there?
Not particularly on MAPS, but what I'll say is that Tony, not surprisingly, selling himself short, Tony's involved in a litany of things that impact the community, both outwardly and quietly, involved in the chamber quite a bit, involved in nonprofit work quite a bit, involved in criminal justice work quite a bit. But everything he gets involved in, it's what leadership looks like. It's not necessarily that he's the front man and doing all the talking, but he's in those rooms and helping guide our city in a way that's really authentic. Again, it's an example of leadership for me. It's an example of leadership for other people. You know, there's only so many folks that can be city council people or are going to be county commissioners or state representatives, whatever it is. But honestly, the real difference makers are the people like Tony and others who are willing to do that leadership work quietly through support of the community. I see that from him in so many avenues. And it's the reason that our city has continued to invest in itself is because people like he and others are out there preaching that value structure that keeps us doing that. But to the MAPS end, if we ever lose that desire, because we lose people like Tony who lead us, we're going to be in big trouble because that's a big part of what's helped our city go from the city that Tony and I grew up in as kids, because we're both from here, to the city that we live in today, which is nothing like Oklahoma City was in the pre-MAPS, you know, 80s and 90s is when I was a kid. So
part of one of the things I think we're touching on today, Dexter, it applies to our city. We can't, as with generational wealth, you have to know why it's there, where it came from, the responsibility. There's an appreciation for it, a respect for it, because it's never yours. It's on loan from God, and it was earned by other people. Or even if you earn it yourself, it's still not yours. And so you've got to use it properly. And I think it's important for the people of Oklahoma City, for us, for me, for you, to raise our kids and help them realize what happened in the 80s and how bad, how awful it was, and why we were able to get MAPS passed. Because it was just bad. And so we were able to fix our community. We were able to invest in ourselves. And I loved the advertising campaign, Let's Be a Big League City. That was one of the MAPS projects that we passed. But I don't want to be a big league city. I don't want to be Chicago. I don't want to be Illinois. I want to be Oklahoma City. I want to be Oklahoma. We've got a farm mentality, and I don't want to lose that. When your tractor breaks down and you need help bringing in the crops, I want to come help you. And I feel us that slipping away every little bit, and I don't want that to happen. We don't have to be farmers, but we can always be willing to help and appreciate the gifts we have and share them with other people.
So I've heard leader and community mentioned many times here. Correct me if I'm wrong on the date, but 2014, you were appointed the chairman of the Oklahoma City Community Foundation. Is that correct?
I'll take it as correct.
So I guess one of the thoughts that I have is that job is not going to go to a middle manager at a regular company. That's going to go to somebody who has made a difference in the community, particularly through business or potentially politics. And do you think you would have had that opportunity if Ralph had not started Tyler Media in 1965? Does that train of thought make sense?
It does. I think the key to those type positions are who you are, it's your character. Just because we might look like we were successful or are successful at business, I don't think that gives you the benefit of the doubt to get to serve in those roles. Mm-hmm. I think it needs to be not just about the business success, but who you are.
Similar to that, entrepreneur, business owner, manager, what kind of nouns do you feel like sort of most fit you in the business context?
I think if I personally for Tony Tyler, if I can continue to remember that I'm simply here to serve in any capacity that I'm in, that I'm doing my job, I'm sharing those gifts that were given to me. What does that servant role look like in different situations? It looks differently, but ultimately that's what I think I have to remember.
If I could slightly paraphrase, do you think you would be the servant leader of a company that you own, regardless of what had happened, and Tyler Media simply kind of sped that timeline along?
That's possible. Servant leaders used a lot, and I like that term. I believe that that's how people should, well, it's what it works for me as a servant leader, as a servant. And when I am put in the leadership roles, I hope I serve others. People are incredible. And if we expect more of people, they won't let us down. A lot of times we don't expect enough of people, and they don't let us down. And so if we give people around us the opportunity to serve or to lead, and in doing so, I may look like a follower, but I'm probably not. But then they get to maximize their potential and their gifts and share those with other people and realize who they really are and how they can benefit the community.
If I could, Dexter. So one of the things in a previous podcast about this generational wealth thing, I was talking about kind of my experience. And Dexter asked me, you know, what do you think it is that makes people successful who kind of buck the trend of, you know, shirt sleeves to shirt sleeves in three generations, right? 90% of wealth is destroyed by the third generation. And that's something that I take really personally because I'm a third generation wealth inheritor, right? But I told him, I think humility and introspection about your life, how you got there, and what your obligations are is a big part of helping separate the 90% from the 10%. What would you add to that? How would you supplement that?
That's great insight, Scott, and I would agree with that. I think it's somebody very wise who works here at Full Sail, and y'all believe this, you emulate it. It's not teaching your kids how to handle the wealth. It's understanding the wealth and who they are as a person. It's not transferring the money to the next generation. It's transferring the knowledge and the respect to the next generation.
I think that's right. And the values.
The values, yep. Absolutely.
Yep. One thing I'm curious about, do you talk with your kids kind of about the family story? Do they know the history of Tyler Media? And have you shared that with them and involved them in that story?
I was fortunate to run across you folks long enough ago where you instilled those ideals in me of passing on the values. And I appreciate that. That has allowed my wife and I to do what you said and teach those values at a younger age and along the way. I hope we are. We're trying to.
Yeah. I told, you know, Dexter when we were speaking again in a previous podcast that I will take my girls to wear Scott seat covers, which was the, you know, the precursor to a Ridgequip Automotive. I'll take them to the place where that all started. Because I think connecting them to that story of how we got to where we are is so important as a component of them accepting that responsibility and avoiding the entitlement trap. So I just was curious if that's something that you agree with, and you and Shelley, who's, wow, Dexter, you don't know Shelley, but she's way better than Tony.
Oh, yeah, way up.
Way better. Is that something that you guys think is important too? I mean, from your standpoint.
It is. But we're proud that both our parents were raised on farms. And all four of them. There's just a value system that comes from the farmer mentality. I remember my grandfather telling me, he said, yeah, there used to be a rock there where this road is, and it was huge. And I'm like, well, how'd you move it? It had to be moved. So we just moved it. Well, I mean, whether that was with anyone, I mean, whether it's the horse or a hammer, the cows had to be milked every day. So you go milk the cows. And back to what I said earlier, if your neighbor needed help, you went and helped. And if we had that today, we would be unstoppable as a community.
I think we still have it. I hope I'm with you. I hope we keep it. And every time I see a little shred of it pulled on, it makes me uncomfortable. But I think that is just a great line of thinking for proving the point, as far as I'm concerned, that, you know, you got connected early to those values, to those obligations, to understanding where your family came from and what that story is. And one of the things that I've witnessed over my career in the wealth management world and in the trust world is that kids who are disconnected from that story, or the generation that gets disconnected from that story, and then they find out that they've got, you know, $4 or $5 million, whatever the number is, doesn't make any difference. But when they figure out what that number is, it's just money at that point. There's not a story. There's not a value set. There wasn't a grandpa who told you what you had to move, you know, you move a rock. There wasn't a dad who helped you understand, you know, the responsibility that you had to not only to yourselves, but to your sibling. All that stuff gets lost. And what's left is money. And that's when it gets dangerous for families. We try to help people understand not talking about money, not talking about how we got here is more dangerous than talking about it. And I think far too often families aren't willing to do it.
My dad grew up on a dirt floor, and my mom had an outhouse for a bathroom until she got into her late teens. They weren't ashamed of it. That's kind of just the way it was around with everybody. I'm not ashamed of it. I'm proud because of the values that it instilled in them, and I'm hopeful that they instilled in me, and I'm passing on to my kids. My dad tells me a story of when he was growing up in Okemah that they brought the crops in, and they had the trailer attached to the tractor, and they filled the trailer, and he had to take the crop, whatever it was, to town to get to sell it and to get it processed. And this is the money they were going to live off for the next 6 months. They brought the crop in. That's just what you did. And he's 11, 12 years old. Okay, he's 11 or 12 years old driving this tractor by himself on a farm road, and he's responsible for the family's future. And he turns the tractor over and loses the entire crop. And his dad came and found him, and the first thing he said is, "Are you okay?" And dad's just destroyed. And he never, I think that incident drove his life and his purpose, and he never ever forgot that. Not only what he did and put his family at risk, but how his parents cared about him and treated him when it happened, and the forgiveness and the love that he was able to feel. And it was all okay. And when he shared that story with me, unfortunately, I wasn't much, much older when he shared that with me. That's, wow. But that's what drove him and mom both. And like I said, I tell that to say I'm flattered that I think they instilled some of that in me.
They did. You got it.
Appreciate that. And I hope I am able to share that. But we can't just quit with our own kids. We've got to share that with kids who don't have that opportunity.
Yeah, that's right.
So I heard you mention it, the responsibilities. I don't know if responsibility or privilege would be the right word to describe that opportunity to make a difference outside of your own kids. Could you speak to how that ties into being the child of a business owner and sort of being in that generational wealth process?
Dexter, I believe that one can't fix anybody but themselves. And so everybody has to make the choice to be introspective, to realize what's good about themselves, what's bad about themselves. They have to choose to change. And it's upon all of us, in my opinion, that we should strive to do that more. Because if I'm worried about fixing me, not selfishly at all, but if I'm worried about making sure I'm doing things right, I'm spending a whole lot less time pointing fingers at everybody else.
Yeah, and I guess I completely agree. I think that, I guess what I'm trying to peek at is the messenger makes a huge difference with the message. So I think that me saying the exact same thing has a significantly smaller impact than you or Scott saying that exact same thing based off of the platform that you have, which you have expanded. But you, kind of like you guys said, I was born on third base as well, but you were born on third base. And what sort of responsibilities are there that I may not be aware of based off of my starting point in life? Do you follow what I'm asking?
Sure. I think I do. We're all called to be the best people we can be. And you're asking, do Scott and I have a greater responsibility because of possibly some successes we might have or where we were born or whatever? Possibly. I think we're all called to be the best person that we can be. Do certain people have a higher obligation to be more aware of how many eyes are on them? Absolutely.
Well, I think whether Tony ever knows it or not, or I ever know it or not, you go into a lot of rooms where people know, they think they know your background, or they think they know who you are. And what I would just say, propaganda forthcoming here to our listeners regarding Full Sail Capital, that's one of the reasons why I do what I do, is I love being able to work with clients who are in or who are going to put their children in the same position that I was in and help give them guidance from somebody who's been on both sides of the equation. Someone who has inherited wealth and a business and someone who intends to pass it along. I, like Tony, was never encouraged. It was never, you will do this, you will be involved in this, et cetera. But you feel an obligation to encourage your kids to go find their own path, but to use the resources and the responsibility that comes with them to help them. Well, this is a really bad pun. Chart that course, right? And I do think that being in the position we're in, we have to be humble enough to say, yeah, look, you know, I didn't start the business that I'm asked to lead today, but I lead it with humility and I lead it with stewardship in mind. And like Tony, I think about ways that the things that I'm involved in can better the community, that can keep, you know, from pulling on those shreds like we talked about of what makes our value system as Oklahomans so strong, you know, that farmer mentality, that blue collar attitude. I think you can carry that forward. And I do think that people who are in a position to do that have a greater obligation to do it. Some people choose not to accept that responsibility. I do, and I know that Tony does.
Along those lines, Tony, there's a lot.
What he said.
There are a lot of civic and nonprofit organizations that you are involved with. Would you like to give a couple of them a shout out here?
We have a lot of great nonprofits in town, and we should be very proud of the work that they do. The things that some of our nonprofits do, most of our nonprofits do, is fascinating. They are experts in their fields, whether it's from feeding the hungry or sheltering the homeless. For example, homelessness. If you don't want to be homeless, we have a system in place to make sure you are a contributing member of society with a home and working your way out of that hole. It's amazing what we can do. We have a lot of people who haven't chosen to get there yet, to get out of that lifestyle. That's you know, hopefully they'll get there. But that's just an example. You mentioned the Community Foundation earlier. It's incredible. We have a really good school system, private school system. Our churches are fabulous. They care about helping those who are less fortunate. A lot of good ones in town.
Last question I have for you. You have a lot of nouns that follow your name. Which couple are you most proud of?
Probably father, husband, servant.
Are there any that you think you left off there, Scott?
No, that's what I expected him to say, father. I've seen, you know, Tony with his kids as a friend and watched that. And he's a very good one. Now, again, I think probably a lot of that comes from Shelley, but
amen.
But at least their wisdom and their behavior. But they have clearly latched on to those Tyler family values that Tony's articulated with us today. I've watched them carry that forward, and I expect that they, just like he, will be able to do wonderful things.
Tony, thank you so much for coming by today.
I appreciate your time. Thanks for having me on. Full Sail Capital rocks.
Until next time, fair winds and falling seas.
Thanks, Tony.
If you enjoyed today's conversation, please review and subscribe through your preferred podcast platform. Have a great week. All opinions expressed by the host and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Full Sail Capital. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. Clients of Full Sail may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast.